You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday with Wayne McCurry, who's a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. Wayne, we're waiting for the Fed. That comes out tonight. And when I say the Fed, I mean Jerome Powell and his team announcing the monetary policy of the United States of America. We've had inflation out from the UK at 2.2%. Not bad, just slightly higher than the target of 2%. We've had South African CPI inflation, consumer price inflation, coming down to just below the midpoint, the target midpoint of 4.5% to 4.4%. We're waiting for the SARB tomorrow. We're waiting for the Bank of England. Just sort of summarize how important the price of money is to a stock market.
Yeah, look, it's vitally important. You know, now, this is not all a little bit of theory, and it works over the longer term if you take average valuations into account.
Yeah.
But of course, in the stock market, you've got enormous variations for so many different reasons all the time. But the stock market or a share price, in theory, reflects the present value of future profits.
Right. Okay.
It profits in inverted commas because it can be positive cash flow. It can be dividends, but essentially, call it actually a more correct word to call it is positive cash flow, which does more or less at, you know, boil down to profits as well. So, it's the present value of future earnings, want of a better word, discounted to today's value. So, in other words, if I say to you, Lindsay, I'll give you R100 today. Well, I'll give you R100 in 5 years' time. What's more valuable?
Well, I suppose if you're a sensible person, R100 over 5 years is. But if you're a greedy person like me, I'll take the R100 right now. Thank you very much. A bird in the hand.
Yeah, because it's still R100 in 5 years' time.
Mm.
And if I come to you and say, I'll pay you R100 now, we'll pay you R250 in 5 years' time, you start to think. So the difference between the 250 in 5 years' time and the R100 now is the present value of the 250. Now, the way you work that out is you take into account interest rates and a risk factor for equity. Because interest rates, if you put money in the bank and leave it there for a year, at the end of the year, you get the money out and interest. Now, if you put money in the stock market now, at the end of the year, you want the potential to earn more than interest rates because you take risk. You might not get your money out. You know, it might be less. So roughly speaking, if interest rates are 10%, you want a 15%, 5% risk premium.
Yes.
So before you consider equity, is before you consider buying equity, your expected return should be at least 15%. Now, of course, if that 10% interest rate drops to 6, then your expected return actually goes down, your threshold goes down, so therefore the stock market goes up. So two factors drive the stock market: potential earnings, profits,
yes,
and the discount rate. And within the discount rate, by far the biggest number, two-thirds of the number, are interest rates. So the moment interest rates go down, stock market goes up.
Okay.
And it goes up because of that discounting fact, and it also goes up in that, in theory, in a lower or a falling or lower interest rate environment, companies make more profits because they pay less interest and people spend more. So it's a double factor.
Mm. And there's also a project that might be viable with 2.5% interest rate rather than 5.5% interest rate. So they suddenly say, okay, we can go ahead with this new factory or something like that.
And we can make more profits and et cetera, et cetera. Yes, so
exactly.
Interest rates are vital. But in theory, once again, it's the interest rates in theory into perpetuity and it's profits into perpetuity. But the reality is the stock market never looks more than 3, maybe at maximum 5 years out. At absolute max, the market looks 5 years out.
Well, this is interesting because if you watch a business program or one of the well-known business channels, And people will say, well, you know, we're going to get this interest rate cut from the Fed tonight, but it's going to be, you know, 9 to 18 months before there's any effect on the economy. That's not what people like yourself are looking at. You're looking at the way that the stock market is what the stock market reacts far quicker than the actual economy does.
Both positive and negative.
Yes, exactly.
And it reacts negative quicker than it reacts positively.
Yes, it tends to like the downside. It's a line of least resistance.
Look, there's one good thing about a stock market crash, a proper crash, is you get to the bottom very quickly.
Yeah.
It's normally not a prolonged one-year period. It normally falls literally in months, if not weeks. So there's one good thing about a crash. Well, it gets the pain over quickly.
Yeah, there's something nice. It's almost like a financial market enema, isn't it? Whoosh, it's all gone. Instead of
it's gone, it's sorted out. The recovery can take a very long time. Mm. There's one exception to that, and that's 87. That recovery was very quick. But other recoveries can take a number of years, and the worst, if my memory serves me correctly, was the 70s. Now, the market crashed in 69. Took a long time to recover.
That was the JSE, right?
Of course, in the
right?
US, well, the world markets. Mm. But in the US, maybe even a worse one was the dot-com bubble. And it crashed in whenever it was, 2002. Took 10 years to make your money back in dollar terms.
Actually, March 2000, Wayne. March 2000, the NASDAQ crashed from above 5,000. And it took goodness knows how many years for it to get back to that 5,000. And now, of course, the rest is history.
I'm not even talking the NASDAQ. I'm talking the main indices as well.
Yeah, it was grim times.
And we didn't live through that. Our market went through the roof and the rand strengthened. So, I mean, you can hardly believe it. And when I give this stat, people look at me in amazement. From 2001, 2002, whenever, through to 2008, our stock market outperformed the American stock market by 350% in dollars.
Hmm. I didn't know that. Where have those days gone, Wayne? I mean, that was obviously China, wasn't it? And commodities.
Yeah, that was the whole China boost and the commodity boost and the mining share boost and all of those things. And the effect that had on the South African economy. Remember, we grew so quickly, we ran out of electricity.
Sounds familiar.
Because, I mean, just a slight diversion off the subject. Forget about all the corruption and all the inefficiencies and all the maladministration post-2010 in Eskom. Forget about that. The problem with Eskom was in the late 90s, they said, right, guys, the economy is going to grow by 2.1% in real terms for the next 10 years, and we had better start building power stations to be ready in 10 years' time. The problem is we grew by 5%. And the government didn't want to commit. The government took 5 years to commit to actually buying, to building the power stations. So the government waited 5 years, and we lost 5 years because we grew at twice the expected rate. So therefore, there was no chance of us having electricity. But, you know, it's coming up next week, I think it is, or this week, I can't remember, of 6 months without load shedding.
Well, that's all very well, but our friend David Shapiro, who lives in the northern suburbs of Johannesburg, I have a chat with him every Monday afternoon, and he said, Lindsay, I can't make it this week. I've got no water. I had no electricity for 8 hours, and it wasn't an Eskom load shedding factor. It was a local substation, and I think you're familiar with this.
A local issue.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's all the same thing. It doesn't matter why. You say, oh, well, it's not load shedding, so that's good. It's not good.
But a local issue is at least not the whole country. It's local. So we've also had water problems, because the problem is, of course, with water, as we all know, there's been no money spent on that infrastructure for forever by dysfunctioning municipalities and also dysfunctioning bulk water supplies. They also haven't spent the capex. But the good news is there seems to be some sort of catch up happening now, hopefully, with the bulk water suppliers, and hopefully also with the municipalities, because the municipalities have worked out that, you know, the ANC is not in power forever, because that was unfortunately the attitude, was that the ANC is in power forever. So we only got to We're only accountable to our political masters, not to the general Joe public. And that has changed.
And talking about political masters, you talk about the growth rate being forecast to be 2.1%, whatever it was you said, but in fact hit 5% over a decent period of time. Also, what the apartheid government said was, they ignored, they said, well, there's never going to be a black middle class while we're in power, so they won't be financially empowered, monetarily empowered, they won't use any electricity, because we'll keep them under the thumb, which is right, isn't it?
As far as electricity, I mean, everything else you say is correct, but as far as electricity is concerned, you're wrong.
Why?
The government, the apartheid government, now let me think of the dates now, late 70s, early 80s, built power stations like it was going out of fashion. And they had such excess power in the late 80s that they went to BHP Billiton,
yes,
which is now South 32, and said, please, won't you build an aluminium smelter for yes. us in Richards Bay to use up our spare electricity? And you know what? We'll link the electricity price to the aluminium price so that you are almost guaranteed a margin. So if the aluminium price goes up, we get paid more. But if the aluminium price goes down, we get paid less. And that's what happened. I mean, the Richards Bay smelter complex uses as much power as the Western Cape. Now, during the worst of load shedding, the quick answer was just turn those smelters off and there's no more load shedding. Of course, you can't do that simply because you've got a valid contract. And the price of electricity in the last 10 years in South Africa has gone up 400%. And they want another 40% increase now, whereas South 32 is still paying the same old price linked to the price of aluminium. And there was a lot of bitterness, obviously, and not many people know this, but there was a lot of bitterness around as to why are we selling electricity when we're having load shedding at a price well below what Joe Public is paying because it's linked to the aluminium price. So the story about the apartheid government electricity is actually wrong. They built too many power stations, and that led to some of the faults. As I said, put aside everything else, that led to some of the faults in Eskom, because the guys built so many power stations in the late 70s, mid-70s, early 80s, and they didn't build any more until Medupi started in 2000 and Futsak, whatever, 2007, 2008, Medupi and Kusele. And all the chaps who had the talent to build the power stations in the 70s and 80s, they had all retired and left. So Eskom decided to build power stations with actually no internal expertise left to do it because they hadn't built a power station for so long. That was the other classic mistake Eskom made. As I said, put aside everything else. They decided to build the power stations themselves to be the project managers instead of going to Siemens or Azure Brown Boveri or someone else and saying, give us the turnkey. We'll pay you, you give us the keys. They wanted to, for many, 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 many reasons, control those projects and that capital themselves. And they just simply didn't have the expertise to do it. As I said, put everything else aside. You know, they just literally couldn't do it because the guys that had the experience had already left.
Or retired.
They're gone, you know, so, yeah.
I never understand why they didn't just export the electricity to Zimbabwe, to Zambia, to Mozambique, to Angola, places like that that needed power. But I suppose the infrastructure just didn't allow it.
Yeah, but the amount of electricity that they need is minuscule. I mean, if you look at the size of the Namibian economy and the Botswana economy and that, they are incredibly small. They would never have been able to have taken that surplus, made any difference to it. I mean, these are really small economies.
Okay, let's get to the markets now. How have the resources stocks are done? Because commodities seem to be sort of stabilizing after a couple of ropey patches. The last time we spoke, was it last week or the week before? Anyway, Anglo-American Platinum, for example, for some extraordinary reason that only the parent company will know, perpetrated the 10% fall on that day. A semblance of normality has returned, Wayne.
I think so. And the actual underlying platinum and palladium prices are both, well, platinum's fallen back a little bit now, but they both went to $1,000 an ounce.
Well, palladium's still at 1075.
Palladium's still there.
Yeah, platinum's still languishing. It's the ugly sister. It's 973.
Yeah, but but that was down at 900.
It's done relatively well. So I'm hopeful. I mean, we'll see what happens with Jerome Powell tonight. We know it's going to be 25 basis points because 50 basis points just isn't in his personality. It's too much. It's too drastic. Yeah. But that's good. They've raised 11 times, and maybe they're going to lower 6, 7, 8 times over the next year or so. Let's hope so. Wayne. And next week we'll have far more to talk about because of all the central bank activity. In fact, I think there's 9 central banks in this week and over next week that are reviewing their monetary policy. So it should be quite interesting stuff. Now, Wayne, I know this is a painful subject for you, and that is stews. You don't like stews because your mother, a dear woman that she was, wasn't very good at stews. But on the other hand, if I served you a steaming pot of oxtail stew with mashed potatoes on the side and a rich sort of red wine gravy, you probably wouldn't turn your nose up at it, would you?
No, I wouldn't. Oxtail's quite nice, but it's got to be cooked for an extremely long time.
3-4 hours at least, yeah, at least.
Extremely long time.
It's got to fall off the bone.
As I said before, I'm not a great fall off the bone person, but oxtail's lekker, but there's one little ingredient you left out of oxtail.
Go on.
And that's about half a bottle of Worcester sauce on it.
Oh, all right.
That's delicious. It is totally delicious.
Yeah, Worcester sauce, and also the other one I've spoken to you about this before is Bovril. I always put a bit of Bovril in any sort of meaty dish that I'm doing, but that's good.
I must try that because Bovril's nice.
Oh, it's lovely.
I like Bovril on carrot cake.
You see, that's weird, but anyway, I'll gloss over that.
You put some butter on the carrot cake and you put a bit of Bovril on that. It is absolutely delicious.
Okay. The reason I say that is because I cooked an oxtail last night. And the other thing I wanted to bring, as you get older, Wayne, which everyone is, but you and I seem to be accelerating into decrepitude, but... But the point is, I can't take rich food anymore. I mean, I went to bed at 9 because I was so full of oxtail. At midnight, I'm awake and I had to come downstairs and watch telly because I was so sort of bloated from this rich meal that I'd made. You're not like that.
No, I don't have that problem at all. I have a iron constitution. Luckily enough, nothing ever gets my stomach down. I'm most fortunate in that, and maybe unfortunate because of your weight. Essentially, no repercussions from what I eat. So yeah, it's just a weight issue.
You're a human tapeworm, in other words, Wayne.
Something like that, yes.
Yeah. What's that shopping centre that used to be quite tatty, but then was tarted up because it was close to Sandton City? You're going down towards
Benmore.
Yeah, Benmore Gardens. That's it. They used to have a butcher there, and I used to work for a men's magazine as a freelance writer, and they decided to give me the recipes page, one of my pages. There's a recipes page. And I once went to the butcher and I said, have you got any oxtail? They said, no. But what we have got is kangaroo tail. It's half the price of oxtail. And I said, I'll give it a go. The readers will like this stuff. And I have to say, it was absolutely delicious compared to the oxtail. Smaller pieces, you know, you get those sort of knuckly pieces.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely fabulous. And it went down a storm with the readers. What are your food stories from the last week, if you have any?
Yeah, I must say, just back to Benmore, it has been tarted up quite nicely, but the parking is still an absolute shocker to get in and out there.
Oh, okay.
I try and avoid it, but anyway, yeah.
What have you had?
Some food stories. Yes, I actually made this, the world's biggest.
Very good.
The most delicious stir fry on Monday night. So I got a stir fry. Okay, this is very much a Wayne type of meal.
You went to Woolworths and bought it already made. That's what you're saying.
Not quite already made, but yes, already made. but I bought the chopped up vegetable stir fry ensemble from Woolies.
Yes.
You know, with all the veggies. And so I bought that. Then I bought little baby sweet corns. You know, the little ones.
Yeah, I like those. Crispy
things. I chopped them up. Crispy. I chopped them up a little bit. I bought some spring onions, chop them up a little bit. Then I bought the Willie's barbecue pre-cooked chicken pieces. Very tasty. Cut them up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Put the chicken in the wok, just sort of like, you know, brown the outside, give it a little bit of a grill.
Yes.
Chuck the veggies in, stir them all around in there. Then I also bought from Woolworths some Thai peanut sauce.
Oh, the satay sauce. And
that was delicious. Mm. Put the peanut sauce in. Then I also got some yellow noodles. Boiled them on the side, the yellow noodles. And then added it all together with cashew nuts. It was delicious.
Sounds very delicious. And, you know, although it was 63% Woolworths, 37% Macquarie, yeah, the fact is that you made the effort. You did a bit of chopping, and then that's very good.
And I must say that the peanut sauce was really nice. It had a little bit of a chili bite to it.
Mm.
It was actually a very, very nice meal.
Very good indeed. Okay, Wayne. Well, thank you very much for that. As I say, next week we'll be doing an interest rate special and more food.
One more thing I want to mention.
Please do.
One more thing I want to mention. I have been saying for literally years and years now, talking and just carrying on. And, you know, some people felt it was outrageous because it's never going to do it. So I've been saying for the last, call it year and a half, that fair value for the rand, roughly speaking, is 17.50.
Where is it
Guess
now?
Guess where the rand is.
Yeah, 17.50. Yeah, actually 17.5490 is on the screen. But has it reached its fair value? Does it go 10% below its fair value, or 10% up from it? Okay, yeah, because it always overshoots, doesn't it, to the upside or the downside? Yeah.
Correct.
Well, congratulations.
Now, for many years, I stood up and said, "Listen, the fair value for the Ront, as far as I can see, is about 17.50." When it was 19.20, people looked at you with blank faces. What is this chap smoking? So I think the next top 17 year in the next relatively short time period, yeah?
Well, congratulations.
And if it hits 17, that's fantastic.
Mm.
Goes a little bit, it goes too much below 17, take into the 16s, take money overseas by the bucket load, because that's the time to do it, not when it's 19.
You'll press the button on our behalf, Wayne. Thank you very much for that insight. As always, Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg, and that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.